It's so unsatisfying.
Dude, dig the cassette out of the closet.
I still haven't been able to find it. It's somewhere. Linoleum Knife.
Yes.
Linoleum Knife, a podcast of the cinema.
Yes.
Where I just
It is that thing.
the th it's a I'm what I'm gonna have to do is I'm gonna have to go buy a cassette because I thought we had one.
And what Model T Emporium is going to sell you blank cassettes?
Oh, we got them. We got
Who's carrying those?
Radio Shack probably has them, and they're not dead yet.
Okay. They haven't
Yeah.
gone completely bankrupt.
The one on Fairfax is still open.
Okay.
I mean, as of the other day, it was still open.
All right.
And I know they have them there.
Everything must
I
go.
guarantee you they've got them there.
Okay. All right. Well, get us one. Get us a bunch.
I don't know that we need a
Get
bunch.
us a three pack then. Because I know you like that ka-chunk at the beginning of the show.
It's vital
And
for my
many of our
happiness.
listeners do too,
I
so.
need the th I need the I need I don't like it when things change.
I'm aware of that.
I don't like it.
I believe you were the one who coined the term fetish for stability in
Something like
in
that.
your hit
That
memoir,
was not a hit
Exile in
memoir. That
Guyville.
was not a hit
It
memoir.
was a cult
It was
favorite.
a How many people do you need to have a cult?
Depends on if we're talking like a literal cult or.
No, for real. Like, how much? Okay, that book sold 4,000 copies. Is that a cult?
That's a cult,
Do I have a cult
sure.
if I sold 4,000 copies? Let's say that 2,000 of those people read it. Like, the rest of them are just, it's on their shelf.
I don't know that people were buying that book and not reading it. It
And
wasn't like
then,
it was de rigueur to have it to be
let's
seen with a
say,
copy of
hang
Exile in
on,
Guyville floating
I'm
around
thinking
your
about this
apartment.
very seriously now. Let's say
Okay.
that of the 2,000 who read it,
Uh-huh.
300 of them liked
Oh
it.
no, okay. You're
Then,
being way too hard
is
on this.
300 people enough for a cult?
It's more than 300.
You don't know.
Hey, of course it is.
Okay, so we were actually in the middle of another more important argument before I
Oh,
started the
brother.
music about the advisability or even the ability.
To.
Is it a thing
Uh-huh.
holding on loosely?
Yes. I say it is.
It's not real.
Because if you cling too tightly,
Right.
you're going to lose control.
No, you're not.
No.
No, you're going to have it in your hand. Here's my
No.
example for you. If you're in the towering inferno, and you're in the glass elevator, and you're next to Faye Dunaway, and that glass elevator falls off the side of the building, it's just dangling by a cable. And then a piece of glass of the glass elevator falls out, and people just start falling out of the glass elevator and dropping
Which could totally
to
happen.
their deaths from like a huge height.
Okay, those are not the people to
If
whom
you
this song is
hold
being
on
addressed.
loosely in that scenario, if you are Bobby Brady in that elevator, which, and he is in that elevator, by the way, I don't know if you've ever seen this film.
I've still never seen the Towering
It's
Inferno.
incredible, and you can learn a lot about your life from it.
But I would argue that if you were in the glass elevator in the Towering Inferno,
You got to hold on tightly, and here's
that you have
why.
already lost
Faye
control.
Dunaway, to save herself, might push you out
It's quite
of
true. Not the
the
character,
thing.
like actual Faye Dunaway.
Actual Faye Dunaway might push you out of that glass elevator.
To up her odds, yes, it's true.
Because
But we don't know.
it's
You know
hanging
what?
by a cable. They got to lose the dead weight.
Faye Dunaway might
That kid doesn't
also
even know what he's had,
risk
got in the.
everything to save your life. You don't know.
She won't.
We don't know. Who? It's like force majeure. Until you're in the situation, how do you know?
38
Faye Dunaway could
Special.
be a hero.
38 Special is not. They are not to be obeyed.
Because here's the thing. I don't think you can wrap your mind around the thought of losing control ever. So, you know, you think that as long as you're going to be in control always and the boss of Madame Full Charge, you might as well also be clinging tightly.
I've done it my whole life, and it's worked out fine.
Yes, the white knuckling gets its name not from the color that your knuckles turn, but because Dave White invented it. It's named for him.
I'm a success story.
You are Dave White, by the way.
I'm holding on tightly.
Film critic for movies.com.
Yes, I am Dave White, the film critic of movies.com. You are Alonzo Duralde, the film critic for... You're the boss of the film critics.
I'm the film reviews editor.
For the Wrap. And also, you're a personality who appears on What the Flick.
Yes.
And whose makeup situation... Is whipping back and forth. Can we not much talk, like Willow Smith's
hair. I really didn't want to talk about this. Okay, so
it's happening now.
So they changed the lighting at the Young Turks. There's this big orb now that's like inches away from our heads, like a UFO. Yes. And everybody else looks fine under the orb. And the
you've got a pink ruddy
makes
complexion.
Me look like a tomato.
You've got a red complexion.
Yes,
your skin is gloriously.
Suddenly,
pink.
I am W.C. Fields under the orb. So I turn to a very talented makeup artist friend of ours who I will not mention his name because,
he does good work.
He does good work, but
he does
I don't
good work
I
he puts makeup on famous people.
He does. I don't
regularly,
want,
like
I don't,
weekly.
I don't want him to be judged by the slap job I've been doing of it on myself.
Right, but he's not been the one putting the makeup on your face.
No, he gave me the product.
You've been slathering it on yourself.
And he gave me a tutorial on what I was supposed to be doing, and apparently I'm doing it all wrong because.
You are.
I think a couple times I did it okay because no one said anything.
No,
and then there was,
I did. You earned.
And then there was one time that people were like, "What is happening with your face?
Right.
Seriously, like I'm asking out of concern."
That day that someone asked you what was going on with your face, I looked at the video, and you had it half on your face and half not on your face.
Well, see, that's the
so
thing.
Half your face was bright red, and the other half of the face was the color of. A 70s orange couch.
I didn't want to overdo it because I felt like I looked like an Oompa Loompa, and then I was underdoing it, and then it was a patchwork.
It was indeed.
So
a face of many colors.
So I need to go back to the professional and say, okay, you can't just give me the product and send me into the world. You have to actually walk me through this because I am not someone who puts foundation on as a matter of course. So yeah. So anyway, that's been a treat.
Here's the thing, though. Doesn't Ben do it though before the?
Sometimes Ben will take this like little vial of like Clinique out and dab, dab, dab. But not often. Not as a matter.
He doesn't,
not
he doesn't have the red face that you have.
He does not have the red face. And Matt actually never puts on a drop of this stuff, and he looks fine under the orb. The orb is
and
out.
Chrissy
to get
looks
me.
Fine because she has her normal.
Well, she's a lady who
her
wears
normal
makeup.
Lady makeup.
Yeah.
On.
So you know. Little inside baseball for you, Young Turks.
That was a great day. Seeing your patchwork face was really...
Yeah, thanks. Thanks a lot.
Really excellent.
I appreciate the support from you, my husband. That means so much to me.
I'm not just your husband. I'm also your number one criticizer.
You are. Thanks.
We have movies.
We do. Talk about the cruddy new movies... We should talk about the passing of Albert Maysles.
Yes, which is sad and also sort of inevitable. I mean, he was 89, 88?
Something like that.
He was old.
He was old.
You die when you get old.
But
and he did a lot of incredible things with his 88 years.
Yeah, he was one of the game-changing American documentarians.
Yes.
He and his brother David, their notable films, many notable films include Grey Gardens, Gimme Shelter, Salesman. They recently did a film called Iris, which I have not seen.
I haven't seen that either.
Apparently can be watched online. I actually posted a link.
If you haven't seen Gimme Shelter or Grey Gardens or Salesman,
yeah, get thee to it.
Then either you are very young and are excused until just now. Like now you know they exist.
All bets are off.
Now you know they exist, so you must go watch them.
Yeah.
And if you're old, like us, and you've never heard of these films or Maysles, then you're probably not listening to this podcast, and we are not your friends. I think that's safe to assume.
Well, but we could be friends if you ran out and started watching them.
We might be friends if you'll go out and watch them.
But I posted...
You got some catching up to do.
I posted a link on the Linoleum Knife Facebook page of sort of a list of the essential Maisel's movies, and also I think it includes a link to watch Iris online. So,
oh, all right.
So there's that. But yeah, you know, I'd say the Maisel's brothers and Frederick Wiseman are probably the most influential of the sort of post-World War II American documentary filmmakers.
Yes.
They really kind of changed what documentaries looked like and the parameters that they existed within. You know, and they paved the way for people like Steve James and, you know, Laura Poitras and Errol Morris and, you know, the sort of current cream of the crop.
Right.
So anyway, we just wanted to acknowledge that passing because...
Here's a cool thing, too, that you can go. If you know who this person is and you've seen these films and you want to peek into his life.
Oh, right. Yes. You should post this link on our Facebook page.
I should. He lived in this old townhouse, I think in Harlem, with his wife / partner of many years. And the inside of this house, many photographs of the inside of this house are on The Selby. If y'all never seen The Selby, It's not an interior design site necessarily. It's more like a
cool houses.
It's the insides of the homes of creative people.
It like what was
and
that?
And it's a really cool website that I like a lot.
What was that magazine that you used to get all the time? Nest.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
very
kind
much,
of like Nest.
It's definitely the digital like child of Nest, where you.
It's not so much like, get this armoire. It's more like, here's what these cool people, who are artists or whatever.
Really interesting, creative, smart people who do things in the world.
Yeah.
This is where they live.
How they live, yeah.
And so the inside of Albert Maisel's house is on The Selby. Mm-hmm. And he lived a lot, and he had a lot of stuff.
Yeah. He went places and brought things back from those places.
Yeah. So you should check that out, too. Here's what you should not check out. Chappie book.
I did not hate
read,
this movie
read
as
Chappie
much
book.
As, I did not hate this movie as much as you
Chappie,
did.
Read, you book, read but, a book to Chappie.
But it's annoying.
Me, number one gangster, Chappie. I want to kill myself now that I have seen Chappie. But only, and this is predicated on the condition that I also get to kill everyone in Chappie. All the characters, not the actors, not these real life people. I get to kill all the characters in Chappie, including Chappie. Why don't you tell them what it's
wow,
about
okay.
and how you enjoy-ish?
I enjoy-ish it. Yeah. Okay, so it's the third film from Neil Blomkamp, the South African filmmaker who did District 9 and Elysium.
He owes me an apology, by the way.
And
a personal apology.
He has pretty much ridden the one-trick pony about as far as the pony will go in terms of future dystopias and kind of techno-grunge. This time, it's...
techno-grunge. You're funny.
I don't mean grunge in the 90s sense. I mean
I know,
grunge in terms of actual filth.
I know. It sounds like an old-timey...
Yeah, no.
You sound like an old-timey person talking
No,
that.
I'm not...
Keep going. Keep talking.
I won't be judged by you.
It's too late. Keep going.
Anyway, so it's Johannesburg, and, you know, crime is run rampant, and Dev Patel has created these indestructible robots that can do basic commands and that work for the police force. And his co-worker, Hugh Jackman, who has a mullet and wears a cross and wears a gun at work, which no one seems to have a problem with, has developed this giant robot called Moose, which is far too much firepower for the cops to actually use. And he is bitter and stewing about it the whole time. Why he doesn't sell this thing to the military, I don't know.
Yeah, it's,
but because the police don't want it, but the military would totally use it. Anyway, Dev Patel has been working on his off hours on trying to create actual artificial intelligence, to create a robot that would learn and that would have, you know, taste and could write poetry and all that kind of stuff. And so he's doing.
An evolved soul that would be in touch with the beauty of life.
Exactly. So he's been he creates this AI program. He wants to put it in a robot. The big boss, Sigourney Weaver, will not let him. So there's a boss. There's a robot that gets damaged in the line of fire. The battery fuses, so it can't be replaced. So it's going to die in 5 days anyway, and it's set for the scrap heap. So Dev Patel kidnaps it, downloads the AI into it, and lo and behold, the robot becomes sentient. And unfortunately, at around that time, this street gang played by the hip hop combo Die Antwoord, who are sort of playing themselves because they're playing characters with their own names and they're wearing their own merch.
They're playing Crime Die Antwoord.
Yeah, okay, fine. The
Future Murder Crime Die
Phantom
Antwoord.
Zone Die Antwoord, whatever. So they kidnap Dev Patel in the hopes that he can turn off the cop robots while they do a big heist. But he can't, but they do wind up with the sentient robot who becomes known as Chappie, and who, like a baby, has to sort of slowly learn things. And unfortunately, he's mostly learning things from Die Antwoord, so he picks up a lot of really stupid, like, street patois, and
Well, he's learning how to be, and this is the weirdest part of it, because the ninja, the man of Die Antwoord, his presentation. Now these people are like South African performance artists who became, musicians. But his persona is like skinny prison tattoo meth person with awful haircut who has received all sorts of cultural cues from American hip hop and then filtered through an entirely different culture. So like the macho posturing is there, and the gangsta talk is there, but there's no connection to anything about where it really
Way
comes
back,
from.
yes.
And so, okay, so then there's that, which is then transferred into a robot that is a baby.
That's a lot of
Now,
things.
this is a wonderful idea. Okay, conceptually, I am pro Die Antwoord in the world. They're gross and freaky and fascinating, and I'm into it in 4 minute song chunks at a time. We'll get to that in a minute. I'm also into it as a concept for a big Hollywood movie. Like in a Freddy Got Fingered sort of way, where they give you a budget and you're like, guess what I'm gonna do with all your money? Ha ha! Middle fingers in the air. I'm gonna put Die Antwoord in a film.
Yeah, sure. I've got Hugh Jackman and Sigourney Weaver and Dev
Yeah,
Patel, but they're
whatever.
supporting characters. It's
Yeah.
really about Die Antwoord.
And the trailer suggests that Dev Patel and Hugh Jackman and Sigourney Weaver are the main humans in this movie. They are not. Sigourney Weaver's in this one for 5 minutes. Hugh Jackman, what, 15 minutes? Dev Patel, more woven into the narrative.
Yeah.
But the main characters are Die Antwoord
right.
and the robot. And they are training this robot to be a murder robot baby
Yes, and a
that
car
does, and a
thief.
carjacker who genuinely injures people and cuts them up with big knives.
Because he doesn't understand
Because
what
he
he's
doesn't
doing.
understand what he's doing.
Yeah, and so they're like they're
So when
kind
he's
of.
done, he's sort of like, read Chappie book.
Yeah,
Read Chappie my book.
so they you know
Okay.
they a Chappie is voiced and motion captured by Shoto Copley.
Kind of motion captured. I read about
Oh
this.
yeah.
He did all the stuff and then they animated over him.
That's
So not exactly the same as motion capture.
so they rotoscoped the robot on top
Yeah,
of him?
something like that.
Okay, well,
Yeah.
whatever.
It's this ish
Potato,
motion
potato.
capture.
But nonetheless, it's his movements and stuff. And so yeah, so they lie to the the robot promises Dev Patel that he won't do crimes. So so Ninja has to keeps lying to him about what's actually is happening. He tells him that if he stabs people, they'll go to sleep. He tells them that the cars they're stealing actually belong to him and that he's stealing them back.
Right.
You know, and it all builds up to then Hugh Jackman does this virus that screws up all the police robots so that they'll use his moose robot right. instead, which somehow no one traces to him except for Dev Patel, who then doesn't tell anybody.
Don't give away all the plot.
Well, but that's where the movie loses me because I liked the idea of...
We haven't actually spoiled anything yet for the record.
Yeah, this is all... You can pretty much glean this from the trailer. You know, I like the idea of what this movie has to say about, like, parenting and about nature versus nurture and about, you know, stuff like that. I thought there was some kind of fun stuff. I know you found the Chappie character really annoying. I thought he was...
Incredibly irritating.
I found myself moved by his predicaments.
No. When he got set on fire at that one point, like in the like the first third of the film.
Yeah, when the kids are tormenting him.
The bad guys are tormenting him. They set him on fire. Yeah. He's the and this is, by the way, Ninja's teaching him how to be tough.
Yeah.
And so he sends him off to these other, like, street crime teens who set him on fire. And because he's made of titanium...
He doesn't burn.
He can't feel it.
But he knows they're being mean.
He knows they're being mean. But the whole time I was like, okay, well, good. Then maybe you'll die. Like, you should go.
I felt bad. I felt bad for Chappie.
I did not feel bad for him one bit, because he cannot be physically harmed.
No, but still.
And because he's so stupid and Jar Jar Binks-like.
Oh, my God.
That...
Are you telling me when the person that he considers to be his daddy drops him off, gets in the van, and takes off without him, leaves him in a strange place surrounded by cruel people who are then mean to him and throw rocks at him and set him on fire? You didn't feel anything?
No.
Oh, my God. You are dead inside.
No, I'm not.
Well, okay, so...
I am alive with a variety of flavors.
I was moved by Chappie's plight, and I liked... I thought there was some cool stuff. Here's my thing with Neil Blomkamp. I think that all of his movies contain interesting concepts and some cool visual ideas, but that they ultimately fall apart. And they get they either get too weighed down with coincidence or with over-plottingness, or they just go to places that aren't very interesting, or they go to resolutions that aren't very interesting. And this one, unfortunately, falls into that trap where all this stuff happens that just seems ridiculous, that doesn't make any sense within the framework of the world as it's been presented and this robotics company as it's been presented. And it just takes me right out of it.
I'm a fan of Blomkamp's moral universe.
Well, he's very fight the power.
I'm down for his message, you know. And it's admirable, but it's not any sort of revelatory stance.
And it's a thing where, like, I can agree with what he's saying and still think he's saying it badly.
I like his humanism. I even like the production design of his films. There's this sort of junk heap, cinematically ugly, you know, world that he drops his people down into.
Right.
And they kind of have to claw their way out.
Yeah, his filth is filthy.
They have to work their way through it or claw their way out of it, or arguably what he wants is for them to help each other out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And they mostly fail to do that, and that's the point.
Like, yeah.
There's a point at which humans will be so awful to each other and ruin the world so much that you might never get out of it.
Mm-hmm.
I like that as a message. I did not like this execution of the message. I feel like the character of Chappie is not sympathetic enough. Mm-hmm. The character of Chappie is too grating to win anyone over. And I feel like the members of D'Antford are not actors. They are not good actors.
A little of them goes a long way, I agree.
A little of them goes all the way. And this is 2 hours of them. With her baby talk.
Yeah.
And him with his...
swagger.
His awful, empty swagger.
Mm-hmm.
And they are, they cross over from like an anti-hero position,
right,
to just flat out repellent.
Yeah, no, I will give you that.
And because they are kind of the bad guys,
yeah,
even though they're I'm doing air quotes here, even though they're raising Chappie,
right,
they're the bad guys in this movie. I mean, Hugh Jackman is also one of the bad
guys.
He's
the worst guy.
He's the worst of the bad guys.
And if I were a Christian, I would be really annoyed by how he's always got the crucifix on. He's always telling people, you should come to church with me and stuff. And, but he's this psychotic.
He's a psychotic person,
and
right.
It's just such a lazy kind of, you know, thing. He doesn't even...
I bet you there was more about that in the script, and they cut it down.
Because I'm sure there was some connection where basically if he's all angry about this... about Dev Patel and his AI, you know, that opens up that whole, oh, he tampered in God's domain can of worms. But no.
Well, he actually says that, if you recall. He says, what in the name of the Lord?
Well, yeah, he says that, and then his virus program that takes down the RoboCops is called Genesis.
Yes.
But still, it just feels very tacked on, like, you know, meh.
This is an incredibly chaotic and muddled, you know, film.
Yes.
And it's just obnoxiously bad.
It's annoying, but there were things in it that I liked. But again, as with all of Blomkamp's movies, all the more frustrating that they don't just flat out suck. You know, they've all got things in them that I like, that I think are cool, that I would have liked to have seen them, you know, looked into further, but then things fall apart.
Fellow film critic Aaron Aldericio. For those of you...
Not actually a film critic.
For those of you who don't know, our very good friend, Aaron, and we've discussed on the show a few times, probably. He loves this movie. He just texted me 5 minutes ago.
Oh, really?
He just went to see it.
Okay.
He wrote, I thought Chappie was great! Just for as a major Hollywood vehicle for Deanne Ford. Because he's a huge fan of it.
Because everybody wanted that. No, this movie has its defenders. Our friend Amy Nicholson, who's been on the show, liked it.
Amy liked it.
When I said on Facebook yesterday that you hated it, and that's why I was seeing it, because we had to be able to talk about it on the podcast.
Right.
A lot of our younger listeners were defending it.
All y'all are wrong.
I think they just maybe need to see more movies, but, you know, if they liked it, they liked it. Whatever.
That's... And you're wrong.
Anyway.
Wrong.
So there's that, and then there's what else? This is not a very good weekend.
This is a terrible week.
Yeah. What do you want to talk about next?
Unfinished business.
Oh, let's. You get to explain this one.
Okay, so they were going to call this Business Trip. And then they changed the title to something that means even less than that.
It went from generic to, like...
It went from generic to pointless. To meaningless, yeah. And the plot is not... Well, okay. The plot is Vince Vaughn works for a terrible boss at a terrible corporation.
Right.
His terrible boss is played by Sienna Miller. Her name is Chuck. No explanation for that, by the way.
It's probably Charlene or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Or Charlene, as they would say on Designing Women.
It's an annoying thing that they do to strong female characters in mainstream American movies. They give them names like Alex and Sam and stuff like that.
Interesting.
That is a thing that happens.
Yeah.
It happens less often now, but it still happens. And every time it does, I think... That's so weird, and there's something sort of reverse sexist about this, you know.
Well, what's that line that Dorothy Michaels has in Tootsie about how masculine women or something, or that being an independent woman makes you masculine or something like that?
I don't know. I don't remember.
I'm very proud to be a woman, Dr. Brewster.
She comes to him and tells him that he has to take a 5% pay cut. Mm-hmm. And he's trying to figure out a way to get his kid into private school. The reason his kid needs to go to private school is because he's...
Okay, you're jumping way ahead.
The child is being bullied.
Yeah.
And he says to her, look, I can't take a pay cut. I need a pay raise, really.
And I had a good year.
You know. I had a good year. And she's like, nope, take it or leave it. And he's like, I'll leave it. So he goes out. He leaves, takes his stuff to the parking lot, where he meets Tom Wilkinson, who is being forced into retirement because he's 67 years old. And Dave Franco, who doesn't work there, but who showed up as an interviewee, and who just decided, well, I'll go with this guy. Maybe he'll give me a job. So Vince Vaughn wants to start his own company and compete directly with Chuck and that company. And the stuff that they are dealing with is called swarf, and that is a real thing.
Yes.
That is metal shavings. That's the byproduct of industrial production. So when they're making steel girders for whatever.
Beams.
Yeah. The little metal shavings is called swarf.
Henry Moore statues.
And they don't just throw that stuff away. They pack it up and they sell it, and who knows what they do with it, but they do it. It's kind of unglamorous commodity that, you know.
Someone out there has to
makes the world go round. Makes the world go round, and somebody's got to take care of it.
Yeah.
And it's someone's job
yeah.
to move that stuff, transfer it, ship it, sell it, buy it, all that stuff.
The movie's one of my bones of contention. The movie's never clear about what they're actually doing.
I don't find that to be a problem.
They could have given me two lines of dialogue, and
okay,
I'd have been
sure,
happy.
Yes.
But because if I don't understand what they're doing, then I don't know what the goal is. Like, I know they're trying to get the handshake. They keep saying, I want the handshake, we're going to get the handshake, we're going to close the deal with the handshake. But if I don't know what the deal is, then I don't know what the steps are to get to the handshake or what they have to accomplish to get to the handshake.
What the movie wants them to accomplish to get to the handshake is a lot of, you know,
hijinks.
Slapstick antics and hijinks.
That are
but
mostly
that's not,
not
what the film really wants to be about. It doesn't want to be about the antics and the hijinks. It doesn't want to be about the mechanics of what this company is going to do.
It wants to be about what a great dad Vince Vaughn is.
It does want to be about that, but it also wants to be about a critique of work and the way work exists now in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
Something that other films before it have come and gone and done in far, far more lucid ways.
Yes.
Like I said in my review on movies.com that this is what film theory people refer to as an incoherent text. It does not know what it wants to be about. It does not know what it wants to say. And the expression incoherent text comes from the 70s to refer to films like Taxi Driver, where you're rooting for and terrified of Travis Bickle.
Right.
All at the same time. It can even apply to a film like American Sniper, where you are horrified by what Chris Kyle has to do, but you're sort of rooting for him to come home and recover from his PTSD and get out alive and all that kind of thing.
Right, but you're not saying the unfair is that in a good way.
Hang on. You can apply the incoherent text to a film that is intentionally so.
I see.
Or to a film that is unintentionally so. This is unintentionally so. It is just confused.
Yeah.
And contradictory. It celebrates and condemns. It asks questions and gives you cues for its critique while simultaneously backing away from those questions
right.
and those cues. So the activity, as they head off to Berlin to make this deal, the activity all around them is the G8 summit and its concurrent riots / protests.
Right.
Where people are throwing bricks through windows and being arrested. And in this very weird scene, they are caught in the middle of a riot, but they are trying to explain to the police that they aren't like these people.
They're here to do business.
Look at us. We're here to do business. We're wearing suits, and you should let us go. You know, and they could just as easily be the Yes Men. Do you know who those guys are?
I was totally thinking about the Yes Men, yes.
And so...
So basically what the movie puts this giant honking metaphor in the center of it and then says, don't look at that.
Right.
Ignore the elephant in the room.
Every character in the movie hates the job they do, hates the way they are treated for doing it. They say so out loud. Tom Wilkinson's character actually says, I want a future. He's 67, by the way. I want a future that has some joy in it. If you're 67 and that's what you're saying, your life is a mess. The movie doesn't care about this. No. Only to have him say it. Nick Frost's character, whose job is with the people that they have to make the deal with.
Right.
He is also a sad sack whose only pleasure comes from dressing up in leather and going to Folsom, Europe, the BDSM festival over there. And he actually says, I'm so unhappy with my work.
Yeah, the movie can't decide what page it's on. You know, on the one hand, it wants, you have these sort of sentimental FaceTime conversations between Vince Vaughn and his bullied child, who he thinks that somehow sending him to private school is going to miraculously save him from that.
He may be sending him to Dalton Academy, where he will join the Warblers. They have a zero tolerance policy.
Dalton Academy burned down this week.
Oh, he can't go there then.
No, the Warblers are all singing with the New Directions now. Anyway, so there you've got, on the one hand,
poor
you've got
the Warblers.
I know. On the one hand, you've got your devoted husband and dad, Vince Vaughn, husband to June Diane Raphael, who's hilarious, but you'd never know from this movie because she has nothing to do. And then at the other hand, they want to be like boobies and peepees and all this stuff, you know.
Boobies and peepees, which are visually represented throughout the entire film.
Yes, we don't get a lot of peepees in Hollywood movies. And I got to say, this one, they keep the peepee game happening. You know, you've got Dave Franco's character who is, first we're supposed to be kind of laughing at how he's kind of a doofus, but then we find out, oh no, he lives in a group home. So, you know, no, don't make fun of him. He's actually a go-getter. And then it's revealed that, you know, he's this key member of the team and he contributed all this stuff to their business report, even though there's never any conversation over the course of the movie where you even get the impression that he understands what it is they're doing. It's maddening, this movie. And the only reason that it's even worth this much discussion is that it is occasionally funny, which is
not nearly enough,
but occasionally, which is more than can be said for just about every other Vince Vaughn movie of the last decade. I went back and looked, and since The Wedding Crashers, oh my God, what a litany of suck.
Yeah.
I mean, Four Christmases and Fred Claus and yeah. Couples Retreat and yeah. The Watch and The Internship and Delivery Man.
No, Vince Vaughn just does not care.
Clearly not.
Yeah.
And this was directed by the same guy that did Delivery Man, which was even worse than this. Vince Vaughn, I, you know what? Maybe True Detective Season 2 will shake things up a bit.
Change his life.
Yeah, he'll have a reconnaissance. But brother,
Avonissance,
exactly. Yeah. But yeah, so I mean, I laughed a few times in this movie. It makes it automatically better than, you know, any of those movies I just named. But
yeah, it's about survival and agony and misery and humiliation and really going for it.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't want to actually commit to what it's about or to be as depressed.
Go for it. Pull yourself up by your bootstraps. Yeah. We're not going to give you any boots. We're taking your boots away. Your boots have been downsized. You have little flip-flops. Pull yourself up by your flip-flops.
This is like if you got like this sort of radical text of economic inequality and then gave it to Dennis Dugan to turn into a wacky comedy.
Yeah. And it's written by a guy who knows what this stuff is about. It's all his
films. Yeah, the Pursuit of Happiness guy.
And the guy who wrote The Promotion and the guy who wrote, I'm blanking on the other stuff he wrote.
Several movies that are about sort of
that
like...
that are about the agony of work.
Grim economic times.
I just feel like someone took his script and just decided to really like blow their nose on it.
Put smiley faces on it.
Yeah.
Hey, and speaking of corporations...
We have one.
We do. In our pocket.
In our pocket. They came to us begging.
Really? Except they didn't.
They were like, please, 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 baby, please, baby, please, baby.
Baby, baby, please.
Audible.com.
Yep.
They're sponsoring us right now.
They are.
I mean, at least for this episode.
Yeah. And
as long as we don't screw it up. Let's not do that.
Fingers crossed.
Let's not screw it up. And you guys, listening people, you have to help not screw it up, too.
Yes.
Here's how. Well, first of all, we have to tell you what they are.
Yes,
maybe you don't know what they are. If you don't know what they are, then it's kind of like you don't know about Grey Gardens.
Yeah. Like, where have you been?
They are the biggest audiobook company on the planet.
Pretty much.
They're part of Amazon.
They are.
And they have like 180,000 something plus, almost 200,000 or something like that, audiobooks.
Yeah, a ton. And periodicals and all kinds of things.
You got a free one.
I did.
For signing up this week.
I did.
Which is what happens to you when you sign up.
Yes. All you have to do...
Which one did you get?
Listeners. I got the Black...
We'll tell them what they have to do in a second.
Okay, fine. I got The Black Isle by our friend Sandy Tan.
She's our personal friend.
She is our personal friend. And she wrote...
She's an authoress.
She has the kind of publishing deal where they do an audiobook.
She has some kind of publishing deal where they publish her book into
various languages.
Croatian.
Yeah.
Like, that's... She's got a book deal.
Yeah.
Like, I had a book deal... That was...
We had a book napkin.
It was weird. I had a book deal that was written on the back of a box of Fruit Loops. And then it got wet.
I mean, look, Dave and I had books out.
In a puddle outside.
I still have a book out, and I love my publisher. But, you know, no one's getting my book in Croatian. But Sandy Tan's The Black Isle, an unabridged audiobook.
21 hours.
Yeah. So that's a lot of car trips.
That's a lot of free audiobook.
Yes.
So, okay, you got that one for free.
I did.
And then also, I got Amy Poehler's Yes, Please.
Mm-hmm.
Because she reads it.
Yes.
And that's incredible.
Yes.
Also, here's the thing. Audiobooks. I pick audiobooks that I don't want to have to actually read.
Well, that, yes.
Like I'm not going to get Moby Dick. Somebody wants Moby Dick audiobook.
Sure.
But I don't want Moby Dick audiobook. Like, I have to read it this year, finally, for the first time in my life.
Really?
Well, the LA Opera's doing... Moby Dick.
And you're going to read Moby Dick.
In October, they're doing Moby Dick.
You're going to read Moby Dick.
I'm going to read it before October.
All right.
Yeah.
Knock yourself out.
I will. With a big copy of Moby
Probably,
Dick.
Probably,
yes. And,
But that's not... There are other kinds of books that you want an audio
If book Amy Poehler read Moby Dick...
Oh, well, okay, I would get that.
Then I would get that. But...
In the meantime...
She reads her own memoir, and I want to hear her read it, too.
Yes, of course.
Like I'm Chappie, and that's my book.
Chappie book.
Kim Gordon... Girl in a Band?
Yes.
I got that. Well, I'm going to get the actual book, too, and I want to read along while she reads to me.
So it'll be like Yolandi reading to Chappie.
Kind of. Well, like when you were in first grade and you had the little recording and you would read the book with the recording.
Now,
the
when Kim Gordon is reading her book, does it beep so you know when to turn the pages?
It better.
That's always a big help, I think.
So anyway, this you can put this on... Your computer, you can put it on your phone, you can put it on your iPad or whatever tablet.
Your Kindle, your Android.
Any smartphone you have. Like, I have to do it on my computer because I still don't have a smartphone.
Right.
Because y'all ain't got me yet. but this is a very awesome service.
Yeah.
Like, you don't have to go out and buy chunky... CDs of, you know, like, you know those old audiobooks that had like 12 CDs?
Oh, yeah, no, I think I have the Valley
you
of the
have
Dolls.
Audiobooks
on
cassette still, yeah, I know. So this is a technological advancement and a futuristic thing that I can get with.
Yes, because it lives in the cloud.
It lives in the cloud, and I don't have to think about it, and I can drive around in my car in nice Los Angeles listening to Amy Poehler talk to me.
There you go.
Now, here's what happens. Y'all listening, you get a free audiobook and a 30-day free trial
of audible.com. All you have to do...
All you got to do is go to this.
Audiblepodcast.com.
Not audible.com. Audiblepodcast.com
/ /linoleum.
Here's why this is important.
That's how they know.
That's how they know.
That we sent you.
That we sent you. And that's how you prove to them that we have more than 7 people listening to this show.
The time has come for you to prove your love.
Right. Now, I think after 30 days, they start charging you an amount of money.
Yes, there's a monthly membership and you can cancel it at any time.
You cancel it if you don't want it, but like, I think this is a good deal.
The membership gets you a free book a month. And
you know what a cheapskate I am.
Yes.
Like, I'm the bad cop with the money.
Oh, I know.
In this house.
Purse strings tight.
I'm down for this.
Yeah.
I'm down for this because I want this. And I'm going to treat myself.
All right.
As
someone Amy Poehler adjacent would say. treat yourself y'all with audible.com.
Y'all go do this. Make sure you put linoleum in it. audiblepodcast.com/linoleum
We will put a link on our Facebook page and in our Twitter feed. It's super easy, and it is a treasure trove of awesome audiobooks.
The five people you meet in heaven.
I don't know how many chicken soup for the soul.
Other books, such as that.
They've actually a lot of fun film books. Mark Harris's Pictures at a Revolution, Easy Rider's Raging Bulls.
The Mark Harris book is great.
Yeah, I mean, my God, the Robert McKee story book. If you're an aspiring screenwriter, Annette Bening reads Mrs. Dalloway. There's a gajillion choices. Yes.
I mean, I've read Mrs. Dalloway.
Yeah, but you haven't had Annette Bening in your.
I haven't had Annette Bening read me Mrs. Dalloway. I would totally. That's on my list now. Yeah.
What movie did I just see where there's a running joke about Clarissa Dalloway?
It was one we just recently saw together.
Yeah.
And it was terrible, whatever it was.
Oh, ouch.
But they were still talking about.
Oh, no. It was an episode of Looking. That was it.
Was it?
Yes.
I thought it was a bad movie we saw.
No, it was an episode of Looking.
It was episode of Looking. They were talking about Mrs. Dalloway.
Yes, it was the Halloween episode.
Right.
Which was not terrible.
Not terrible, no.
Okay. So, yes. Yeah, so, audiblepodcast.com/linoleum. Welcome aboard as a sponsor. Our listeners will run out there right this second, I know, and start signing up for Audible Podcast, for audible.com.
Y'all better do this, because if you don't do this and I hear about it, I'm going to come to your house. You're not going to like it.
You're going to pick up your phone and sign
you up. I'm actually threatening our listeners right now.
That's not a good move. It doesn't stand.
Obey me. You know.
Be nice.
I'm being nice.
Be nice to those.
I'm being nice right now.
Hey.
Second best exotic Marigold
Hotel. Yeah, not so nice.
All right, here's what's great about the second best exotic Marigold Hotel.
Please tell me what, because I have no idea.
Finally. Somebody calls out the horrific practice of American tea preparation.
Oh, right. Yes. I knew this struck. This hit home for you.
This is an anthem for me now. Okay?
Maggie Smith lays it down.
She doesn't just lay it down. She lays it down and wipes the floor with the people who are committing crimes against tea preparation.
Well, the movie begins in San Diego for no apparent reason.
Doesn't matter. But they're in America.
She's there with Dev Patel.
Smith go to San Diego for, Comic-Con or something, right?
Yes, they're at Comic-Con.
They're at Comic-Con.
For the Exotic Marigold Hotel panel in Hall H. No, they're in San Diego to meet with David Strathairn, who runs like a string of elder care, living facilities.
Right.
And Dev Patel's character is looking to expand his empire beyond just the Best Exotic Marigold Hotel.
He wants another Marigold Hotel.
Yes. And
The supreme old-timey...
The supreme something.
Charleston wow-wow.
Yeah.
Right. Hotel.
Something like that. Anyway,
and
so...
And they get Maggie Smith a cup of tea.
Yes.
And she goes off on the guy giving her tea, because what he does is he pours some hot-ish water in a cup and sets a tea bag off on the side. Let me tell you something. That ain't the move. Now, I cannot repeat verbatim. I can't repeat verbatim what she says, not because it's profane, but because I just don't remember it precisely. But in the United States, at any diner, restaurant, wherever you go, they bring you hot water to warm water with your tea. And they expect you to put the tea bag in there and just hope.
Yeah,
that tea results.
Like if you're in a hotel conference room,
yes,
and they have like a coffee and tea service set up,
yes,
the hot water that is available for tea, steam will be coming off of it,
right?
Usually,
but it ain't boiling.
But it's not boiling.
And here's what you need with a tea: with black tea, regular straight up black tea, you need boiling water. You need slightly less with green tea. You need like 180-ish degrees, 185-ish degrees. I have a thermometer.
You have given this a lot. lot of thought.
No, I haven't given it thought. I've done my homework, and I have a little thermometer.
Okay.
And I make sure my green tea water is the right temperature before I put that green tea bag in there. Now, my black tea is either PG Tips, obviously. I know this is incredibly fascinating to all of you.
It is more interesting than the Second Best Exotic Marigold Hotel, black tea, so please go on.
PG Tips, that's a bag, but I have a lot of loose leaf black tea.
I was
going to
say,
well.
I thought the real tea people were very snotty about the bags.
They are, but PG Tips is kind of like if you're lazy, and I'm lazy.
Okay.
All right. So, but I have a lot of loose tea, and I have a strainer, and I pour that boiling water. Like, until I'm ready to pour. That water is still boiling in the kettle. It makes the whistle sound, and I pop it open so that it's still boiling but not whistling and waking you up.
Thank you for that.
Because it's happening at 5:30 in the morning.
Yes.
And so, but you better have it boiling when you pour it on that black tea, because that's how you make the tea. Well, Maggie Smith goes off on the guy, and I.
And you stood up in the middle of the theater and applauded.
I almost did. I went like this. I kind of put my hands up in the air like
Meg Ryan.
And You've Got Mail. Yay! And then it becomes a plot point again later in the film when Maggie Smith is doing a little Snoop sistering, trying to figure out who's who and what's what. I won't give it away.
Uh-huh.
I don't want to spoil the thrilling conclusion of the Second Best Exotic Marigold Hotel.
And I think you're actually misreading that scene, but since that scene is a spoiler, we won't talk about it.
I'm not misreading that scene. That is simply clue number one that pricks up her ears.
Fair enough.
And she knows right away that she's got the right
something is amiss. Clue
sense.
Number two is the
yeah,
is supposed
clue number
to be
two
the
is where she really knows what's right. up. But so here's what the movie is about. Dev Patel is getting married to Tina Desai. That's the actress's name. His name is Sunny. Her name is Sunaina. Yeah, that's it.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
So anyway, those are the only two characters whose names I can remember. All the old people are just their names. There's Maggie Smith. There's Judi Dench. There's
Bill Nighy.
Celia Imrie. There's Bill Nighy. There's Penelope Wilton. There's Richard Gere, who's now officially old, by the way, in case y'all forgot.
American Gigolo was 35 years ago.
Yes, it was. And... so you got all these folks
looking for Mr. Goodbar.
Tom
even
Wilkinson,
longer.
He died in the first movie.
Yes, and went up to do Unfinished Business.
And he does not return as a gay zombie.
Sadly, no.
As we would have hoped.
Gay ghost, I would have settled for.
Exactly. So I heard this song this week. This is a complete digression.
About gay zombies?
No. I heard a song by a band named Diarrhea Planet this week. The song is called Ghost with a Boner. It's not a terrible song. It is not an awful song.
Really?
You should check it out.
I'm not going to do that.
You wrote up the word ghost, and that reminded me of the song Ghost with a Boner.
I will not be checking that out.
That I heard this week.
I would say
the song is like 2 years old. I'm really behind the times.
The song that people should check out is the Carly Rae Jepsen video that you showed me this morning. With a special surprise guest star in
it. Well, no, the Carly Rae Jepsen song is very sweet, and the video is really fun. And by the time this podcast goes up, everyone will already have seen it, because it is going to set the internet on fire.
I'm sure,
in the next 25 hours. This two-year-old song by a band called Diarrhea Planet that I had never heard before, but you just made me think of it by saying the word ghost.
Okay, well, forget I mentioned it.
It ain't terrible. If you like new music by bands... From 2 years ago by bands that write songs about ghosts and boners.
This could be the thing
this
for
This could
you.
Be your next favorite thing.
This could be your jam.
We're avoiding talking about the Second Best Exotic Marigold Hotel.
Here's the thing. The first movie was based on a book. And so as sort of fluffy and disposable as the first movie was, and how it really much just existed to let those actors kind of be charming and bounce off each other, there was at least a story there. This time around, they were like, well, that worked, and we need to make a sequel.
Now what?
Now what? Yeah, exactly. Now what is it they should just call the movie? Every dilemma is so sitcom-y. It's
right.
So Three's Company, like Mr. Roper half hears something at the door, and the conversation that people aren't having to clear it all up. It's maddening from director John Madden.
And then Chappie shows up.
Yeah, I wish. This is a movie that needed D'Anvoort in it to spice things up. Yeah, so just all these situations that are so contrived and so hacky, and you're just like, oh, God, just... everybody resolve it and let's go home. So the added to the pot this time is Richard Gere and one of my favorite actresses, Tamsin Grieg, who I loved in Tamara Drew a couple years ago. I think she's very funny on Showtime's episodes. Gets nothing to do.
Yeah, she doesn't have. You wonder even why she's in the film. Until the end when they tell you why she's...
a free trip to India.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's like, yes, okay,
rich,
fine.
Rich India, too, by the way. Yeah, let's just make that clear.
Yeah, of course. Any movie with an Indian wedding, it's automatically going like to be colorful and...
gorgeous.
Musical and zingy.
Everyone is wrapped in beautiful cloth.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like Monsoon wedding
right.
wealthy. That was
right.
some craziness. But, right. you know, it's lovely. But... this movie is just so... you're just like...
you don't even have the words.
I don't. And
I do.
It's frankly, it's condescending to the audience under the assumption that, well, you will come see these people do anything. If you are of the demographic of this film, you are so starved to have a movie that is about...
I don't think it's condescending.
60-somethings that you'll sit through anything. So anything is what we're going to give you.
I don't think it's condescending. I think it's a little cynical because of what you just said.
Yeah.
It knows that you want to see these people in films.
Right.
It knows that these are, you know, these are, minus Helen Mirren, this is the A-team of old people actors.
Right.
Old people British actors. And that's essentially old people actors. So, like, there's no Ian McKellen and there's no Helen Mirren. They're in the
Patrick Stewart.
Yeah, or Patrick Stewart. But everybody else is in these films. Oh, I forgot to turn my phone
down. Turn your phone off, Davey Wise.
You go because these people are charismatic and because these scenarios that they are in don't actually matter. They are pleasurable to watch even when the movie is boring, and the movie is boring.
But they're not so pleasurable to watch that it's that seeing this for the first time
is, I don't know that
is,
I agree with
is
that.
Any more pleasurable than just watching the first one again.
I don't know that I agree with you on that. I think that if my mom were still alive,
she would totally.
I would still go to see her this with her, and I would still walk out of it with her and say, "That was cute, right? You like that?" And she'd say, "Yes."
I was actively annoyed at how stupid this movie was, and
the reason I say cute is because that was my mother's favorite superlative.
Right.
Her favorite superlative to describe a film that she liked was, "That was cute," and so, which is kind of that's mom critic speak,
sure.
I guess, but the...
I just sat there thinking, really, you've got, I'm watching scene after scene of Judi Dench and Bill Nye, and this is what you're giving them to play?
Right.
Like, they're in love with each other, but nobody wants to say it first, and,
right.
And I was like, I felt bad for the cast.
Right.
I felt...
Oh, don't feel bad for them.
Well, no, they were getting paid.
They're having a good time.
I felt insulted. I could just feel this well of anger rising in me that this movie was going to just be such a flagrant waste of resources.
I'm less... I hate it less than you.
All right.
I
hate Chappie less than you.
Yeah. And so, you know, you got a parent? Anybody got an old mom? She's going to really like this. And you're going to go. Because you're going to go with her. You want to know a fact?
Always.
Judi Dench and Maggie Smith have been best friends for 60 years.
Wow. That explains Ladies in Lavender, I guess.
Indeed. I had to go buy a ticket to see this film. The two press screenings were not... convenient. They were opposite other bigger movies.
Yeah.
And so I went Thursday night and I took our whipping friend, Gary Cotty. And on the way out, he said, "Do we think Judi Dench and Maggie Smith like each other?" And I said, "I have no idea. I mean, they've been in movies together. They've been in a few movies together. But I don't know, like, if they show up and I don't know if it's like a Joan Crawford, Betty Davis thing, where they show up and they're actively trying to poison each other's meals, or if they show up and they're like, Judy? Megs?
No, it'd be Judith? Margaret?
Yeah, I don't know. I did not know. So I just Googled it. I was like, do they hate each other? And what? What came up was, no, quite the opposite. In fact, they met like in 1950-something when they were both
ingenues.
Children, yeah. And became, like, fast friends, tight, for the next 60 years. Like, longer than I've been alive, these two have been friends.
Well, good for them.
Yeah. I like that. It makes me feel nice.
And how great is it to, like, you know, peak, not peak exactly, but to go into your 70s and still be, like, a hot commodity?
Oh, both of them. No, yeah, yeah, that's the thing. Like, to both have the same kind of career.
Yeah, it's not like they're going off into the sunset. Like, no, they're more in demand now than they've been in a long time.
Right.
You know.
Right. Anyway.
I mean, Judi Dench was on, like, some British sitcom for a while, like in the 70s.
I wish I could remember the name. I wish I could remember the name of the actress that got interviewed recently, an older British actress who's not as well known.
Uh-huh.
And here's why she's not as well known. I can't even remember who it was. But she was named, she was being interviewed, like, in the New York Times because she was in some Broadway production. She's been stage
right.
her whole life. She's done some films.
Yeah. Like Zoe Wanamaker.
It was someone like that, yeah. I don't think it was her. I don't think it was her, but it was someone like that. And she had nothing but, like, for Maggie Smith and Judi Dench.
Oh, dear.
Because she was like, well, I never was on television soap operas.
Ooh.
Like, stuff like that. Like, yeah. It was very much...
You know, she chewed out her agent when she didn't get that Harry Potter callback.
Right.
She'd have taken that gig in a second.
I genuinely cannot remember the name of this
Little
person.
Miss Shakespeare. She would be... She's like, if there's a third best exotic Marigold Hotel, you better get me in the room, Lou.
I have no idea. I've got to hunt down and find out who said that. But yeah, this person was not having either one of them.
Was it one of those interviews like, blah, 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 she sniffed?
Yeah, it pretty much was.
All right, what's your DVD pick this week?
I don't know. What is my DVD? What, we were just talking about it before we started recording.
Were you going to do the Sound of Music anniversary? No.
No. Whoa. I remember now. Human Resources.
Oh, good one.
Yeah. Human Resources. Now, I'm making y'all hunt.
Oh, is it not available?
It is available on Netflix, but you have to have a CD. You have to have the
physical disc.
The physical disc from Netflix. Okay. It is on Netflix.
All right. Well.
It has been available as a DVD. It is now out of production. But you should try to find it anyway. And if you have Netflix and you get actual DVDs from Netflix, put it in your queue. Because it's a really focused examination of what it means to be trapped in an unwinnable job situation.
Is this the one about the guy who pretends to go to work after he gets fired, or is it the one who works on the assembly line and his son comes to work in the management?
This is the latter. It's a French film or Belgian, one of those two.
Laurent Conte, right?
Laurent Conte, and he it's about a guy who's a blue collar guy, works on the in the factory. And his son...
He's put his son through college.
And his son becomes one of the white-collar executives at the factory.
Right.
And the son does a field study about the benefits of a 35-hour work week. And the management uses his field study to downsize the employees.
Awkward!
And it might be his dad who gets fired.
Yeah.
It's
a movie that delivers on what it's about.
It delivers an impact.
And how, yeah. And, no, it's great.
So I would recommend watching Unfinished Business to see just how confusional this sort of thing can become. And then watch
Human Resources.
Yeah. Like, I was thinking as I watched Unfinished Business, this is the kind of film that you should show to your class.
As a how not to?
As a what went wrong here. You know,
interesting.
I often think that you can learn a lot from these kind of like destroyed films, movies that are just mangled in the process. Mm-hmm. That might have started out as one thing and wound up half one thing and half another thing. You know,
interesting idea.
I think that's something you should do. I'm curating your class.
I don't know that I want to show them unfinished business, no. But I see what you're saying. Yeah. My DVD pick this week is Robot and Frank, which was screened at Sundance a couple years ago.
I don't like it.
I do.
I don't like it.
It's another film about
a
robot that is taught to become a criminal, starring Frank Langella as an older man in the near future when robotic nurses are all the rage in home care. Oh, wait, do both these films have James Marsden in it? No, that's Unfinished Business.
James Marsden is in Unfinished Business.
Yeah, and I think he's also the
but
son.
But he's not in Chappie.
He's not in Chappie, but he's the son in Robot and Frank, I want to say.
Maybe.
Anyway, yeah. So yeah, it's a charming film, I think. And Peter Sarsgaard is the voice of the robot, and I liked it.
Meh. Letters.
Letters.
Hi, guys. This is from Ralph.
Mm-hmm.
You remember Ralph.
Do I?
You're fixing to.
Okay.
Hi, guys. I don't mean to wear out my welcome here.
Oh, this Ralph.
Ralph, before I read this letter, I want you to know that I would like you to write us every week. And I'm not being facetious or sarcastic or unreal here. You're the best of our letter writers, honestly. Here we go. I wanted to address the comments I made in my previous letter regarding my perception of Alonzo's feelings about Ben Mankiewicz.
Yes, let's clear that up. We're friends.
Now, we called him lovely in a response
here
on the show.
Yes.
And because, so he puts the word lovely
because
in quotes
he, because thought, he's quoting us. He thought I was like giving him stink eye.
Yeah.
Which maybe I was. That doesn't mean I don't love him.
He says, this lovely man, that's in quotes because that's our quote. Is obviously a valued colleague and friend. You even invite him to your house for Christmas. Alonso, I had no way of knowing that is a common practice for you to throw that look that reads, I am so disgusted by that stupid thing that you just said at anyone who disagrees with you. Let me tell you something.
If this were a video podcast,
you would see that look.
A lot.
Every 6 to 7 minutes. The Alonso Duralde look of, I am so disgusted by that stupid thing that you just said, is one of the reasons I married you.
Thanks.
Because I don't like a pushover. I'm not into it. I dated some pushovers. I dated some stubbornly recalcitrant people as well. But you have this good combination of not a pushover and yet giving in to me whining.
Okay.
About everything. And so, but yes, the I am so disgusted by that stupid thing you just said look is
it's a staple.
It's a staple in your
repertoire. It's one of my go-tos.
Yeah. And it's delivered to everyone, friend and enemy alike.
That's true.
In my defense,
Ralph
continues. In my defense, I've never seen you look at the adorable Christy Lemire that way. I have such a gay crush on her. Everybody does.
She is adorable.
She is adorable. I hope I'm not coming off like a dick. No. No, you're not, Ralph. You're not. You're not. You are filling me with joy and life. Again, I'm not being sarcastic.
I know.
Or facetious. I love these letters. I'm sure I'm a little jealous that you get to live in a warm and wonderful place while I'm toughing it out in sub-zero snow in Ohio. It's important that I tell you that I have absolute respect and admiration for all film critics, including Ben Mankiewicz. It's beyond me how you watch and then write about the rehashed putrid garbage that the major studios vomit out. Personally, I would rather watch my mom get a Brazilian than sit through anything directed by Michael Mann. Hey! All right, Ralph. We're going to fight.
I was
going to
say, he was your favorite.
Now I'm in a fight with Ralph. I'm sorry, Ralph, but you and me are now in a fight. So get ready.
Maybe he was referring to Black Hat specifically.
Well, then why didn't he say that? Or starring Kevin Costner. That's the second part of the sentence. Yes, I'm a film snob, a flag I fly with pride. I was going to include a top 10 list, but this correspondence has gone on long enough. I'll leave you with that to look forward to. Peace, gay brothers. Ralph. All right, keep writing, Ralph, but we are in a fight.
Send us a top 10 list. We would love to see it.
We would love to tell you how wrong you are about whatever it is.
I don't have a beef with his Michael Mann problem, so you just relax.
This is from Jerry.
Don't speak for me.
This letter is from Jerry. Hey, okay. Jerry. Dear Alonzo and Fried and Freaky Dave White. I don't know where Fried and Freaky... What is Fried and Freaky?
I don't remember now.
I'm sure
it's something you said.
Some malapropism that I just... Cinnamon for.
Heaven knows. Heaven only knows where that came from, but it's probably you.
I'm catching up on some of your back podcasts, and I'm listening to Dave Heap plaudits on the blown-out cinematography of Michael Mann.
Wow, we have a theme this week.
What gives?
We as a country have had enough. And we're standing up to you and all the other blowhards.
But how did it
loving Michael Mann?
How did I get read two in a row that are about Michael Mann?
Because you've got your finger on the pulse. It's the national mood is turning against him.
I'm listening to Dave Heap plaudits on the blown out cinematography of Michael Mann. It makes me wonder if you, Dave White, are also a fan of the photography of Jürgen Teller. I am. Because if you are, sir, then you are wrong.
This guy's my favorite new letter writer.
And there is nothing to be said in your defense. That is all. Love the show, Jerry.
Thank you, Jerry.
You know, I just said that Ralph and I were in a fight, but here's... I'm going to take... Listen. Mama said knock you out with both fists, so I got one fist for Ralph and one for Jerry. Come on.
You have little baby hands.
I do have little baby hands, but they're powerful.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be big and strong like a bull.
Chappy book. That's going to make you laugh forever, I think.
Book, book,
Chappy book.
I really like Jürgen Teller, and I really like Michael Mann, and I'm right.
You're wrong.
I don't even know who Jürgen Teller is at all. You just take a seat.
Go on. What else do we have?
Who else is here to insult me?
Yes, please. Bring it. I'm loving this week's letters.
This is from Colin Gaisley. I wonder what country Colin is from.
It's Colin from Bath. Right? Unless we have more than one Colin.
Do we have more than... Well, if it's from England. Oh, no, it is Colin from Bath.
Yes.
Okay. Look, every other dude in England is named Colin.
Yes, I'm sure.
Seriously.
No, I believe you.
Yeah. Colin, Nigel... And any other name that they can shorten to something like Gazer. I'm not making that up.
I thought that was the Australians.
No, they all do it.
Really?
Yes.
Gazer and Shazer.
Yes, they all do it. Those two countries are insane when it comes to mutating human beings' names into nicknames that make no sense. Hmm. Although I am a fan of what they did to Madonna. When she got there.
Madge.
That's a great one. Madge. That was pretty great.
Yeah.
So thank you, England, for that. And for all the tea.
What does Colin from Bath have to say?
Dear Free Will and Ricky Kennedy. I'm not even... This is so long. Dave. All the nicknames that you could...
That you made up. You know, you don't get to be mad about this because
I'm not mad about it. I'm just saying that I can't read seven of them in a row.
Fine.
Okay. There are a couple of recent films I think it is worth giving a lesson on British slang for.
Ah.
Firstly, and inconsequentially, up the duff is a British euphemism for being pregnant.
Oh.
So every time I hear about that Mae Whitman movie, my first thought is that it is a hard-hitting examination of teen pregnancy.
Maybe that was the British title for Keeps.
Maybe. Secondly, Eggsy in Kingsman could definitely be classified as a chav.
Oh, good. Okay, so I was right.
The big trainers, that's what they call sneakers.
Yes, I know. Okay.
The big jacket and the baseball cap is basically the chav uniform. Also, the comic writer's name is pronounced Miller.
Oh, okay.
I thought it was like Millar or something like that. I know it wasn't Alonzo who had a problem on What the Flick, but I feel I need to set the record straight.
Always good to know.
While I'm on Kingsman, I have to say I really enjoyed it. It's my favorite non-award bait film of the year so far. I loved the crazy action and the violence, and while the church scene made me slightly uncomfortable, overall, I loved it for the scene that immediately follows it. I actually had a much bigger issue with the infamous Scandinavian princess line.
Mm.
I found it unnecessary and ill-fitting. I don't know, this makes me some kind of psychopath. I find it interesting.
Scandinavian princess line sounds like it should be cruise ships.
I find it interesting that a lot of the criticism for Kingsman is entirely dependent on how well you can cope with the church scene. I also think it's interesting that the split between those who can cope with the church scene and those who can't is somewhat generational. I'm in my 30s and loved it, and other podcasters I've listened to in their 30s also had a positive reaction and could cope with the church scene, whereas a slightly more mature group like your good selves and the B-Movies guys didn't have such a good response and didn't like the church scene. I actually did like
the
church
scene. You didn't mind. That was my
beef. I like that kind of violence, and I don't mind it if it's done at the expense of people who are meant to be considered boobs.
But if we're going to open this can of worms again, the thing that bugs me about that scene, though, is you also got Colin Firth, the hero of the movie.
Yes, participating.
Like, gleefully, and obviously, yes, it's mind control or whatever, but it's still disconcerting when it's like, okay, here's the guy we've been identifying with, through whose eyes we've seen the action, and we're supposed to be relating to. So if he's doing this now, are we supposed to be cackling with an entertainment over the fact that he is not in control of himself and is performing violence that he's being induced to do by other people?
And for the record, my only problem with the violence is how it is depicted.
Right.
It is suggestive violence. It isn't blunt impact violence.
Well, I think we've established that you're dead inside.
Candy violence. It is not like The Raid, which is cool, awesome, impact, choreographed, artistic, dance-like
Consequential violence.
Yeah. Being on the other side of the pond, I'd also like to point Dave in the direction of a film I think he would like, The Duke of Burgundy.
Oh, yeah.
Which played here at CineFamily for like 3 nights or whatever and then was gone. So I need to... I think it might be on VOD, so I need to check that out.
Yeah.
It might be streamed. I might be able to stream it. I have heard something to that effect.
It didn't get a giant release over here.
Yeah. It's the latest film from Peter Strickland, who directed Berberian Sound Studio, and it is a weird, poetic film that has a much more believable and interesting take on a BDSM relationship than the one found in 50 Shades of Grey. I have no idea if this film will ever get U.S. distribution. It does have U.S. distribution. But if you get a chance, check it out. And with that, I'll sign off. Colin from Bath of Raw Footage. Raw-footage.co.uk. Go to him.
Speaking of BDSM movies that are more interesting than 50 Shades of Grey, which is probably most of them, I just saw High Heels again. No, Tie Me Up, Tie Me Down, rather. It was a double feature of Tie Me Up, Tie Me Down and High Heels at the New Beverly in 35mm. Tie Me Up, Tie Me Down, which Criterion put out recently. I think I probably made it a recommendation. Very interesting how it sort of throws you into the mindset of these two people and is very non-judgy and kind of expects you to sort of follow along. A lot of mom jeans in both movies. Antonio Banderas, seriously, rocking major mom jeans because it was 1990.
It was 1990. Yeah. All right. We have other letters, but that's plenty for today.
Okay.
We'll get to the rest of them. Don't freak out. Awesome. It'll happen.
Well, so again, we thank you for listening. And just as a reminder, audiblepodcast.com/linoleum gets you a free audiobook of your choice and a free 30-day trial membership.
Yes.
We would, of course, recommend that you check out our good friends on the web. Go to christylemire.com. Check out the Dennis Anyone podcast with Dennis Hensley, the B-Movies podcast with Bibbs and Whitney, the Schmoes Know. Over at Wolf Pop is the Rotten Tomatoes podcast, Malton on Movies and the Canon. Also check out Fat Guys of the Movies, the Criterion Cast, Film Spotting SVU, the Game Night Guys, and Secretly Timid, and the Brett Easton Ellis podcast. We thank Blue for our theme music. You can find out more about his amazing work at Bluetopia.com, Bluetopia. You can subscribe to the program at iTunes and leave us a review, just like who gave us a review this week?
Nate.
Nate from Houston. Thanks, thank Nate. You for the review, because the more positive reviews we get, the more people find the show. It's all an algorithm. So, you know, we appreciate everyone's support. You can also stream us at Stitcher Radio or thelounge.com and leave us a little thumbs up there as well. There's also an app to stream our show on Facebook at the Linoleum Knife podcast page, which if you have not already liked, please do. You can also join the Linoleum Knife group and talk about movies with our other listeners, and subscribe to our YouTube channel where we've been uploading some of our earliest episodes. You can also follow the show at Twitter, at LinoleumCast, and drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com with questions, comments, top 10 lists, anything else that strikes your fancy. And, of course, that's also where you can PayPal us for our Linoleum Knife Presents More Linoleum Knife episodes, most recently The Poseidon Adventure, but you can also dig back and get Clue, Two for the Road, The Apple, Josie and the Pussycats, all available for $1.99 each. And again, PayPal is at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. I was trying to think if there was something else that I needed to mention this week, but I guess that's it. So thank you, audible.com, for your sponsorship. Thank you all for listening, and we'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.